beer.
Do you like beer? Do you want to learn how to make your own beer? It's time for Just Brew It, brought to you by Niagara Tradition Homebrew. Here's your host, Jeremy White, and Bert Deister.
Good Saturday morning. Welcome to Niagara Tradition's Just Brew It on ESPN 1520. Jeremy White and Bert Deister, how are you?
Good morning.
Happy belated 4th.
Yes. Enjoying this after 4th of July weather. It's been like just perfect.
Yeah, we've had a
hopefully
good like
keep
what,
it for a couple of days.
Good 2 weeks of really nice weather.
Yeah.
To this point. And I guess it depends on how hot you like it, but it's been hot, now it's cooled off a bit. We're going to get to a bunch of stuff today. Last week we talked about a white stout, which is something that you don't see a lot of. And you'd mentioned a white stout, if anybody missed the episode, like it's kind of a hazy definition of what it is. You can find a couple different things when you see the words white stout.
Yeah.
So if you want to find out all about that, it's in our last week's episode. This week we're going to talk about a radler and a word that I still am not ready to try and say. What's that again?
Beer mich get trunken.
Okay. It's like beer me gets drunk with.
Beer mixed drinks is literally the translation. There's a couple of Buffalo Brewing Companies doing Rattlers this year, so it's a good time to learn about them because they're going to be, the fad for the summer, just kind of like Shandy's were a couple of years ago.
Okay. Before we get to that, what's going on at the store? Anything we need to know about summer brew supplies, draft supplies?
We have everything in stock, and so we've been kind of focusing on party taps, kegerator conversions, and we'll still have those in. So as we get into the fall and you get into football season, those will be there. High protein, or propane BTU burners, wort chillers, pots, all those things. But we're also starting to see a good push on fruit presses, straining bags, large fermenter, and those people starting to do fruit wine. Because with all the heat that we've had, a lot of fruit is ready early. So we'll talk a little bit about fruit wine making a little bit in the second half of the program. But so we have all your draft stuff still. We have all your big all grain brewing stuff, but we're starting to up our stock already on some of those end of summer items just because it's kind of getting that way, and fruit is ripening, people are starting to make that kind of wine. So we have that stuff in as well, and if you're looking to bottle up stuff from last year on your wine, we have big stocks of bottles and stabilizers, corks ready to go.
Okay. Keg line cleaning kits,
we have those. Those have been popular. So a lot of people, if you've left it, and you tried to, especially coming into the holiday weekend, a lot of people were coming in grabbing those because they hadn't touched their, kegerator in about 6 months. They can really clean up your kegerator well. You don't have to fully disassemble the system if you don't want to. And you can pump sanitizer through there. The pressure, the flow, and the fact that you're soaking it in on there will really get those lines clean.
One other thing I want to sidetrack here for a minute. The Taste of Buffalo is this weekend, and following up, we knew about the homebrew competition, which the winner got an entry into the Taste of Buffalo, so congratulations to the winner. I think it was it's a Heller beer that ultimately won?
I think it was a Keller.
Keller. I'm thinking Hellas and Keller. I'm mixing them up. A Keller beer that won the competition, and if you were in that competition, if you want to see what won it, it is.
You can go try it. And I also noticed that so State Fair does the same thing as well. So you can enter into a competition, and if you win, your beer will be the official beer of the State Fair and served on draft. The other thing that's cool, Flying Bison has a limited release of bottles. I know it's at select locations of that, too. So if you don't know if you're going to make it to the fair, if you want to try some of the beer, you can get it ahead of time. They've already made it.
If I brewed a beer and won a competition and it was like featured at the State Fair or Taste of Buffalo, I would just go there in the beer tent. I would be drinking the beer. And anytime I saw someone else drinking it, I would say, what do you think? You like it? Like,
yeah.
I made it.
That'd be a long, hot day.
Right. By like the sixth or seventh beer, I might be a little bit punchy. But anyway, that's something cool that's going on this weekend if you did want to follow up on that brew competition if you were in on that. Speaking of drinking beers out of a keg, draft systems over hand pump taps. You've been hammering this a lot lately.
Yeah. Because when you get a keg, you're spending $120 on a keg. We sell simple CO2 systems for under $150. We got a couple of different options. So if you're trying to just push out your beer so that it keeps week to week, so you don't buy a keg, buy a hand tap for $60 anyways, and then after night one of drinking, it starts to go off. Get a CO2 system. It's going to keep your beer for the long term, and you're not going to have that stale keg the next day.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit more money, but no pumping, no stale beer. And this is not anything disposable. It's something you'll use season to season.
The Keg King Brewing Controller.
It's been very popular.
Yeah,
in this
given the temperatures.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And great reviews from it. Easy to program, easy to control, good display. It's been really popular, and so it makes a big difference for a lot of home brewers when you can actually keep your fermentations cold.
Okay. So let's get to this Radler.
Yeah. I'm excited about this.
So you're saying that like local breweries are starting to make Radlers.
Yes, and they become really popular in a national scene. And I think we're all really familiar with the English Shandy, the kind of beverage that's a mix of light beer and lemon-lime soda. And this became popular actually in the early 1900s. And at about the same time, the Germans had their own equivalent that they would call the Radler. Radler in German means cyclist. And the kind of legend goes that these were a creation of a small pub outside of Munich, Germany, to draw in kind of cyclists who were, cycling on hot afternoons and have a nice refreshing beverage for them. And the original name is actually, I think, Radler Mass of the original beer, which means cyclist leader, meaning like here's your leader of beer to keep you moving, on your bike. And they became quite popular. It's fairly easy. It's very simple to the shandy. You're doing a 2-to-1 mix of beer to soda, but unlike the English who just use a lemon-lime soda, they would usually use a grapefruit soda or extract mixed with Pilsner or Hefeweizen. So while the English would use a bitter, which would be just slightly sweet and add a little bit of like a carbonated soda to give it a little bit more effervescence and even a little bit more sweetness, you could imagine when you're mixing like, grapefruit with an already, kind of banana strong Hefeweizen, that you're going to get a pretty fruity, pretty interesting, we'll say, drink. Now, full disclosure, I've never actually made one myself. I think I've had a can before of Radler, but I've never actually made one. But I would encourage people to go ahead and make their own, pick their favorite beer, add some grapefruit soda to it. There's a couple coming out. 12 Gates is going to have one. So will Thin Man, and 5 and 20 in Westfield will also have a Radler this summer. So they're going to be around. You'll be able to try them. And it's something that maybe even a bar would mix up for you. If they have grapefruit soda around, you can at the bar.
You order a light beer, a
Pilsner, Hefeweizen, okay, or something like that,
and toss in grapefruit soda.
Yeah.
Like now for a shandy, so this is just a shandy, but instead of lemonade, is
lemon lime. And you see, well, the lemonade is more of a U.S. thing, and actually the Germans would have put lemonade more into theirs. And I think originally it was carbonated, sweetened lemonade that was used, but a very weak version, and the lemon lime soda quickly became more popular. But yeah, they would use grapefruit extracts or grapefruit sodas to mix in with the Pilsner and Hefeweizen. So you would usually suggest putting in the fruit juice first and then putting in, again, that two parts of beer on top of it. And now they do more than just grapefruit soda and Pilsners. And like we were talking about at the beginning, there's this whole kind of like art form or classification of drinks there. Whereas in the U.S., we don't usually see beer used much in mixed drinks unless it's a novelty. And if you want to go online, there's a whole list of very popular beer mixed drinks. So if you have a wheat beer and cola, it's a Weizen Cola. Pilsner and Cola, one of the most popular ones, is called a Diesel. There are tons of these. I'm just kind of picked out a couple. A Schwarz beer and a champagne, so a lot higher in there, is called a Bismarck. And obviously we all know of the Jägerbomb, which is Jägermeister and beer, but they will also, I think there's something called a Turbo Jager where they mix Red Bull in, so you have a three-part beer mixed drink. I mean, normally I would not be encouraging this kind of stuff, but with how hot it's been,
you
need to stay hydrated. You might have some bigger beers in the basement that are kind of, maybe you have, like a Dunkelweizen that's sitting around in the basement and really hasn't been going that well in this 90-degree weather. Well, why don't you pull it out and mix it with some, grapefruit soda and give that a try. So it might bring life back into bigger beers that are just sitting into the cellar right now.
Even a dark beer like that, you're saying you could put
you
in.
You could do it, absolutely. Huh. Absolutely. You could get creative with it. You mean, I could see like Imperial Stout for you and like Cream Ale. You know what I mean? Or like, I'm not Cream Ale the beer, but Cream Ale the soda. Like cream soda.
Okay.
Yeah, or something
so
like that.
So toss cream soda into an Imperial Stout.
Yeah.
I'm listening.
Why not?
I mean,
if you got bottles around,
yeah, right,
you can try it. We'll lighten out. If it doesn't work out, just use half the bottle and then drink the other half straight. But in this heat, I think these are going to be really, you know, popular in these kind of like beer mixed drinks, just to kind of add some effervescence to it.
Yeah,
add some you know, lightness and pop.
You're offsetting any of the malts, really. Like, it's all going to be much, much, not like watered down, but sure. So, all right.
Now, after reading about this online, I think I'm going to try to head to my local grocery store and pick up a bunch of little mini six pack cans to try mixing into with some of the beers in my basement.
Yeah. And this is Beer Mischgetrunk.
Beer Mischgetrunken.
Beer Mischgetrunken.
I think I'm pronouncing that right.
I mean, I don't, who knows? So for Radlers, if you wanted to make a Radler, it's the same as making a Shandy where you make the beer.
Yeah,
and then
you make a beer.
You just make a beer.
Yeah. And now commercially, you see it done a lot of times the other way, where they make like kind of the beer and the soda all in one. But I can tell you, I think especially as a home brewer who's tried to do like Shandy's Bows, you know, brewed and then mixing them, the post mix is always a little bit better. And the reason I feel like that is because you have that higher carbonation, and you have that sugar content of the soda. Whereas if you brew it in there, it usually ends up a little bit drier, or you find yourself using like an artificial sugar to try to sweeten it back up. When you mix lemonade, when you mix lemon lime soda or grapefruit soda with an already fermented, you know, already conditioned beer, I think the effect is a little bit better.
All right. Beer Mischgetrunken. That's the closest I've been yet.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And the Radler is a version of that, is what we're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Radlers you're going to see around here. The other stuff, you might have to try yourself.
Make your own. All right. We'll get a break in. We want to talk about fruit wine on the other side.
Yep.
All right.
Sad season.
Make your own. Right, exactly. Exactly. When you say fruit wine, does that include sangria? Is that different?
Sangria is its own kind of thing.
Sangria is more of a punch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like adult fruit punch.
It's very tasty.
Yeah.
All right. Making fruit wine. That's up next here on Niagara Traditions Just Brewing. Jeremy White here for Niagara Tradition Home Brewing Supplies. You're listening to Just Brew It, which means either you homebrew or you're thinking about it. Wherever you are in the process, Niagara Tradition Homebrew is your source for everything homebrewing. Do what I did. Get a starter kit, and you'll be well on your way. Niagara Tradition will be there to answer your questions, give you advice, and as I try to become a more seasoned brewer, I know I can count on Niagara Tradition to be there with the supplies and the advice I need. Niagara Tradition Home Brewing Supply. 1296 Sheridan Drive, near Military, in Tonawanda. Open Monday through Friday, 11 to 7, Saturdays, 10 to 4, and 24/7 at nthomebrew.com. Niagara Tradition Homebrew. Pay them a visit, and remember to just brew it. Back here on Niagara Traditions, Just Brew It on ESPN 1520. Jeremy White and Bert Dyster. All right, so we're talking fruit wines today and making your own fruit wine.
Yeah, and so we're talking about this because it is that time of year. I've actually already lost all my blueberries to the birds in the backyard, so I got a few that I picked and like would eat while I was watering the garden in the morning, but they've already ripened and they're all gone. Black raspberries are kind of going along the same way now, and red raspberries and strawberries will be doing the same shortly. So we're right in the middle of kind of summer, like early summer fruit season. You'll see stone fruits like peaches and plums, you know, later in the year, closer to fall. But right now is the time for most like kind of smaller berries. Again, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, raspberries are all coming into season, and some of them are actually kind of coming a little bit out. But it is the time to make fruit wine if you want to. And it's an easy way to get rid of a bulk of fruit. And unlike making jam, and I always try to make this point, you will actually consume it all. And it will become better with time, not gross. So often, like, we grow all these, you know, raspberries, black raspberries, blueberries in the backyard, mostly just for picking and eating. But when you have this big bumper crop and you know those birds are going to come in, like, right away, or squirrels or whatever is getting them, I could blame the dog, too. I don't actually watch them too much by the blueberries. Yeah, you have to get them off all in one bulk load, all in a hurry, and a lot of people don't know what to do. So you do the easiest thing, which is make jam. But from my personal experience, I never go through all the jam. You know, I can it all in nice little jars and put it in the freezer. I always forget it's there. Whereas wine, you know, wine I'm often digging for in the basement. Exact opposite. I'm trying to search for whatever I have, digging into every back corner. So my suggestion is, when you have this big load of fruit and you don't know what else to do with it, make wine. Now, first, what you want to do is collect as much as possible, because you're always surprised at how much fruit you need per batch of wine. We're talking about at least, like, you know, it's for a lot of, like, berries, like strawberries, you want like 8, 12 pounds per gallon, if you can, of, like, when you're holding the whole fruit and you haven't crushed it, pressed it, or anything like that. You could be using as much as like 8 to 12 pounds per gallon. So that's a lot. You don't want to sign up for making, you know, 5 gallons of strawberry wine unless you got a cheap or free source of strawberries. You know what I mean? We do sell plenty of concentrates, which will be a lot cheaper than just walking into Tops and, you know, trying to buy like 50 pounds of strawberries or something like that, which is just not going to happen. But if you do have that source, again, you're going to want to make wine out of it, because it's a way to get rid of a lot of fruit. So collect as much as possible, because if you need to make the batch a little bit bigger, water and sugar will be easy to come by later. More fresh fruit will be harder. So try to get as much as possible. And the first thing that you want to do is wash the fruit with warm water, just usually spraying it, you know, in a colander in the sink, kind of let it drip dry, trying to get off any dirt, bugs, you know what I mean, you know, fuzz or pollen that's, you know, drifted by. And at this point, you could actually freeze it, you know, pretty much indefinitely, to hold on to use for beer or wine later. So if you don't know when you're going to have the time particularly to do this, and you have the extra room in the freezer, you can take all that fruit off, gently wash it now, and then freeze it so that, you know, in the fall when the temperatures get a little bit cooler and you don't mind spending as much time, you know, in the basement, you know, with fruit, and the fruit flies aren't as bad, and the wasps have, you know, finally, and yellow jackets have gone away in the colder nights, you can put it away and save it for another night. And I just want to get at least that far. So if everybody's listening, you can tune out now, tune back into the show in 6 months, you know, procrastinate. But you at least want to wash it and then freeze it now. This doesn't do anything to pasteurize it, and you're going to have to do that later, and you'll have to process it a little bit when you get it out. But you can make, you know, fruit wine, fruit beers off of frozen fruit. So if you don't know what else to do with it, get to it before the birds, unlike me, and put it in the freezer. All right, so once you have all this fruit, you need to start processing, and you're going to need a small stainless steel pot or bucket to crush it in, and you're going to want to pulverize the living hell out of it. The more you crush it, the more tannins, the more flavor, and the more sugar you're going to get out of it. So crush it. I usually use a potato masher and really go to town on it. Then you do have to sanitize it. So we talked about this a little bit earlier in the summer and the spring. We were talking about making fruit beers. You can sanitize it with heat or with sulfites. Now, sanitizing with heat is definitely easier. You just bring it up to 170, try to keep it below 180, hold it there for at least 20 minutes and cool it down. But that will change the flavor a little bit, and it may make it a little bit cloudy. So a lot of people choose to do the sulfites. So you might have like a little bit of water and say, you know, like a gallon and a half of crushed fruit, you'd want to take enough for like a gallon and a half of liquid and treat it. Now you let it sit there for 48 hours before adding the yeast. And what the sulfite's going to do is it's going to grab oxygen. It's going to remove oxygen from the fruit so it doesn't oxidize. And it's going to create sulfur dioxide gas, which is going to kill any bacteria, which will prevent it going to vinegar later on in the process. So you definitely want to do something to kind of pasteurize it, whether that's sulfites or that heat, you're going to have to do something. Now you can start adding water and sugar to get to a desired volume and a desired ABV. So you will need a hydrometer. I would suggest going in the 10 to 12 range, because that kind of makes a better wine. If you go really high on the alcohol and you're trying to make a brandy, it can often come off, you know, phenolic, you know, sickly sweet and a bit boozy. So I would suggest making something in the 10 to 12 range. If you want to boost up some of the batch later, you can always add like a very neutral alcohol when you're bottling, so you can kind of fortify it. You could even back sweeten that, you know, portion of the batch even a little bit more to try to make, you know, a little bit different of a beverage. So you can have some kind of like, you know, strawberry liqueur and some kind of light refreshing strawberry wine out of the same, you know, batch of strawberries. Now, I'm not going to get into the full details necessarily of fermentation because this is a home brewing show and the winemaking is fairly easy and the fermentation is going to be fairly close to what you see. You're going to spend, you know, about less than 3 weeks, anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks, inside, you know, your primary fermentation. You're going to move it after it's done completing fermentation into a secondary. You're going to wait for all the, everything to drop that will drop. Then you're going to add a little bit more sulfate, some sorbate, back sweeten, clarifier, and then wait a week and bottle. So it's fairly simple compared to your beer making. What I'm going to try to do here is talk about some of the common problems that you run into when working with the fruit. So if you're a brewer, you know fermentation, you know pasteurization, you know bottling, you know racking. But working with the whole fruit can be intimidating. First thing I would suggest when you're pouring the fruit into the fermenter, use a very large straining bag. Because when you use a very large straining bag and you put it around the bucket, kind of like a like you would a trash bag into a trash can, when all this kind of sloppy mess goes in there and everything's said and done after, say, you want to pull the skins and pull the fruit after 2 weeks, you can just lift out the bag and wring it all out. There's no more like pouring the bucket through strainers or trying to get somebody to hold one of these straining bags over a second bucket, or you can try to get away without using a press. And if you're getting cheap fruit, not having a press will really only affect your efficiency, so you can definitely do this without. The other big question, and I think one of the big kind of intimidating factors for brewers going to make wine, is the worry of acid being out of balance. And this can be an issue, and depending on the fruit, generally you're going to be a little bit high or low. But even if you're a little bit high or low, one, you don't need to invest in a massive acid test kit. You'll be able to taste it. Either the wine will be kind of muted and not really have good side of the tongue flavor, and you know, really won't, the bittering aspects of it won't come out. That means you're usually pretty acid low. If you're acid high, it's sharp, it's astringent, it burns the side of your tongue, so it comes off very bitter. And it will be very obvious if you're well outside an appropriate range. If you're going to start making wine, you do not need to go get an acid test kit per se. If you taste something and you're having problems, now is the time to look at, you know, something simple, pH papers or something like that, to see if you're in a range. Generally, there's some things you can do to kind of prevent some of these problems from low acid too. So often if you're making, say, you know, blueberry wine, blackberry wine, you might be a bit low on the acid, and you'll see a lot of home recipes, and I do like this, have you add sliced lemons to prevent oxidation. So if your acid is low, what will happen is that those acids usually take away the oxygen before it can get to the tannins. And if you don't have enough acid, oxygen will hit your tannins. So what is a beautiful red wine slowly starts to become kind of brownish or amber in color. By putting some sliced lemons in at the beginning, you can kind of prevent at least the oxidation. You may have to acid balance later for flavor, but the lemons will help prevent kind of any oxidation or color loss. If you have kind of a very sharp wine and you have high acid, you can get acid reduction powder, but you can also add a little bit of water to it too. And you can take off a sample and try this. Try a little bit of acid reduction powder, try a little bit of sweetening, and then just try watering it down, because often or not, you've ended up a little bit high in the sugar, about 16%. When you add some water, it brings the total acid level down, and it all of a sudden becomes nice. And you're going to want to use distilled water. And the last problem that brewers have is that their wine will not clear. With wine, there's not usually as many problems as there are with beer, or problems to create. And all grain brewers especially put a lot of tension into the mash to preventing chill haze. With the wine, often that kind of haze is coming from pectin proteins, which were not broken down on the fruit in the vine. So it's not your fault. It's nothing that you did. And it's really easy to get rid of. And that's just by adding pectic enzymes. So you can add it at the beginning of the fermentation, and that will guarantee that you won't have it later on, which is what I like to do. But if you do discover it later on, you can absolutely still use the enzyme, and it will help break those proteins down, and you can have a nice clear wine. So I just always want to kind of get a lot of brewers into winemaking because it is fairly easy. It is kind of that kind of think outside the box, and a lot of the kind of lessons and flavors learned will, you know, work well for homebrewing, especially if you're starting to try to get into, you know, Belgian beers that use very high amounts of fruit. It's nice to play around with a couple of 1 gallon batches of wine just to get yourself in the idea of processing the fruit. And the fruit wines are fun kind of thing to play around with summer. Wine yeast generally like to ferment a lot warmer than beer yeast, and you're usually doing these in 1 gallon, and they don't require any heat. You can heat to pasteurize it, but you don't have to. So if it's the middle of the summer, you have all your beer set aside, you're looking for something to do, try a 1 gallon batch of fruit wine. Again, there's no heat. There won't be a ton of mess in the 1 gallon at least. And you can always freeze the fruit to kind of put it off to later if you want to.
All right. Making a fruit wine. I can't say I've ever had, I'm trying to think if I've ever had a fruit wine that's not grapes.
Yeah.
I've had an apple wine, I can tell you that.
Yeah. The apple wine, Perry, you often find really good ones. It's like, I think part of the problem is most of us have an association with fruit wines with grocery store discount sparkly wines. You know what I mean? The kind of, you know, mist and farm wines, we'll call them, of grocery stores. But there are a lot of very nice made, especially, you know, to enjoy during the summer, fruit wines that are made more like traditional vinifera. You do see some local ones. You will have to go to a better wine store to find some true fruit wines. And you often find them more in the sake section, much more popular in Asia, especially with plum wine. So give it a try. It is the season. If you're stocked up on beer, if you don't want to be sitting around a hot kettle, this is a nice fermentation project that you won't need any extra equipment for.
All right. Stay cool out there this weekend. We'll be back next week on Niagara Traditions Just Brew It on ESPN 1520.
You've been listening to Just Brew It, brought to you by Niagara Tradition Home Brew. Whether you're a seasoned brewer or just want to get started, visit them at 1296 Sheridan Drive in Tonawanda or online at nthomebrew.com. And be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Just Brew It.